This is Hot Tech with Jan Vermeulen.
Been champing at the bit to talk to you all week, Jan Vermeulen. Good afternoon to you, and you well?
Good afternoon. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So last week we ran out of time, and I wanted to chat to you about the documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma. I wanted to know from an expert whether we were being manipulated or not, or whether the world is in fact as Orwellian as that documentary is making it out to be.
Yeah, it's a good question. There's some things about the documentary that I don't necessarily agree with, but in terms of its depictions about how, you know, the kind of subtle manipulation happens, I think that that's spot on. I wouldn't go so far as to call it Orwellian. Orwell depicted a dystopian future where you had sort of a central government having control over not just the public discourse, but over the history. Like, it was able to alter the written record. And so, while there is, perhaps a cultural debate happening around, permissible language and that sort of thing, that's not something that's being, mandated by many governments, though. I mean, there are some controversies, even in democracies around the world, around a mandated, you know, like, issues of language and words that you are allowed to say and not allowed to say. But nitpicking aside over whether to call it Orwellian or not, the answer to your question is yes. And you can be the smartest person. You can be the smartest person in the world, and if I want to say an adversary knows enough about you, that they'd be able to manipulate you. In this case, the manipulations, like in 2016 and in other campaigns, like the Leave campaign for Brexit and so on, from my reading of the issue and from listening to people who were involved there, the targets of those kinds of campaigns are usually people who are sort of determined to be manipulable and whose vote has not been decided yet. If you are someone who is strongly convicted one way or the other, then this kinds of propaganda will generally not be targeted at you, because it's a waste of money. Because that's important, right? Is that in many cases, these campaigns have to spend money through advertising on platforms like Facebook to reach you. But if your vote is spoken for one way or the other, then targeting you is useless. So they go for people whose vote I would guess are more moderate, who are open to having their mind changed, and who these various algorithms determine to be manipulable.
I was hoping that you were not going to answer the question like that. I was so hoping it was going to go the other way. I want to go to a question from a listener, Achamor, yes, who says, please ask Jan Vermeulen the following about Facebook. Is it actually possible to use Facebook on its maximum privacy settings and stay safe, or is it all a smokescreen to hide what they're really doing in the back end? Because after all, you are the product.
Right. So this is one of the bones I have to pick with the social dilemma, is the proliferation of this truism. You know, if the service is free, then you are the product. That is a gross oversimplification of how it works. Now, in Facebook's case, I'm picking this bone, but in Facebook's case, it's generally true. So they're not selling you. They're selling your attention, and they're selling a kind of
access to you,
and access to you. But they do more than that, because they profile you, right? So it's not like they expose all of your private information, except that one time when they did, to these potential adversaries and to nation states that have a stake in manipulating the outcomes in other countries for whatever reason. It's all anonymized and privatized and all that stuff. So yeah, you can absolutely back up your security settings. You can make it so that Facebook collects the absolute minimum amount of data to you, that it doesn't personalize ads to you. The thing is, in Facebook's case, what they do is, while they don't make it, okay, you know, would you like to sell an ad to Jan Vermeulen? They don't make it, you know, like quite that targeted, though they can, because I mean, they've got all my information in their system. What they do is they go kind of like, okay, do you want to target liberals or conservatives? Do you want to target people who are pro-choice, or people, who are pro-life? I don't know if I'm using the correct terminology there. I'm so out of the loop there. It's able to kind of, divide and conquer, I guess, people at that level, and make it easy for advertisers, to target people at that level. So, like, on a purely commercial capitalistic sense, a very attractive target audience in terms of just making money on new mothers, right? Because to a lesser extent, new fathers, new parents in general, just spend an inordinate amount of money because children are expensive. And so, they become like very attractive consumers for advertisers to target. But the flip side of that almost, more noble goal, or noble is perhaps the wrong word, but the sort of, you know, neither here nor there, you know, it's not like a good or evil cause to target a potentially interested consumer with advertising that's relevant to them. But where that goes awry is where they're able to target people and serve propaganda directly at them. The answer to that question is complicated, because the privacy settings is one aspect of it, but the other aspect of these social networks has got nothing to do with how easy they make it for advertisers to target you and having those advertisers be potentially malicious actors. It's also got to do with who you surround yourself with, the so-called echo chamber. Because what these platforms have become really good at doing is allowing people to insulate themselves from opinions that disagree
That's the problem, Jan. You're stopping able to discern what's truth and what isn't truth, and you get fed all this nonsense because the algorithm knows what you're after. That you, it's the echo chamber. It's exactly that.
And the thing is, this has been really good for connecting like-minded people across continents that have not been able to communicate before. Now, if you're part of a model airplane society, no harm, no foul. But correct. It's also enabled the resurgence of things like
pedophilia, for example.
Pedophilia is an example that nauseates me. And it you're completely right, because besides sort of less less offensive, I almost want to say, things like flat earthers, more offensive situations like anti-vaccinations, like you get truly, truly evil things like pedophile rings that have organized themselves on these social networks. And like there's been a lot of pressure on them, and they've clamped down on that like truly evil practice or use of their platforms. Not that it's perfect. At least there, you know, there's no question about that. You don't see Facebook trying to make excuses for that kind of advertising, though they'll make excuses for political advertising. But when it comes to pedophilia, everybody's on the same page at least.
So Jan, I didn't play out of the song today because this conversation was way too interesting for that. We have probably less than a minute left, and Hachamor came back at us with the following, and you really have to give me a very quick answer. So is it worth deleting Facebook, Jan? That's really what I want to know. That's from Hachamor.
Right. So let me answer the question this way. My wife has deleted Facebook and communicates with our family through other platforms. I have kept Facebook because I work in the media. And the folks who I've spoken to who have deleted Facebook don't miss a thing.
What a fascinating discussion we've had this afternoon. Jan Vermeulen, I'm very grateful for that. Thank you so very much.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.